You're not sure if they're true or not. It really, you know, to a certain extent, I was just thinking when Rabbi, I don't remember these stories, but in Chinuch, to a large extent, perception becomes reality. We'll come back to that in a little while. We have this little handout, which I prepared, just to have some Likudis. At least you could always look back on it, some of the points which I hope to be able to touch upon. And I very much would like to hear suggestions, feedback, stories, like we just heard from Rabbi Hertz. I'd like to reiterate the tremendous, tremendous impression that the Moisdus Chinuch over here made upon me. And I told it to a number of people that it's been a very valuable experience for myself, a learning experience to find out what we have and trying to apply some of the things that I saw to our Moisdus in England. We timed it to come here now. We're talking with Mrs. Epstein, started talking with me last summer, and we've been through various situations and alternative dates. And I suggested now, because in England we are now celebrating the Diamond Jubilee of Her Majesty Queen Elizabeth II, and the country declared a 2-day legal holiday, Monday and Tuesday. So I said, I come for Shabbos, I'll miss, I was in school for the beginning of the day Thursday, flew here Thursday, so missed half a day Friday, and Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, we don't have school anyway. Speaking about the Queen, and trying to connect it to Chinuch, and trying to connect it to what the Rebbe said, one of our teachers, a female teacher from the school, who was a shluchas, is a shluchas. And she came from the United States, and the first time she went into Yechidus, after she was already in England, the Rebbe asked her how she compares the children in England with the children in the United States. So she said that they tend to have more derech eretz, better manners. By the way, that was in those days, it's about 45 years ago. She said that the English children seem to have more manners. So the Rebbe said to her, the reason for that is because it's a country which is fortunate to have a malchus. And that instills in the children the concept of derech eretz and formality and things like that. Why am I mentioning it? Because the Rebbe told other people, you know, being in France, you're very fortunate. Because there is the spirit of revolution. And people will be prepared to have a revolution against the Yetzer Hara. And the Rebbe told other people that being in Eretz Yisrael, the children are very independent. And they hardly listen to their parents. So it's a good way you can get them to become more frum than what they were shown. And children from the United States, I believe the Friedrich Rebbe said, they have a tamimus, a pshitus, they have a sincerity, an openness. And we can use that. So what I gather from all of these different stories is that our job is to be able to see the nature that there is, the raw material that we're dealing with, and to be able to use every single aspect rather than to see it as a problem, because each of these things can be seen as something which is limited. You know, a person is too bound by tradition, they don't grow. If somebody is too revolutionary, then they're disruptive. If somebody is too sincere, they may be gullible to bad influences. But the Rebbe chose to say, in every one of those aspects, there's something good, something positive, and we have to find that within ourselves and within each of our Talmidim and Talmidos. The first point I mentioned here, Shalev Esoyle Me'eleha, we just heard from Rabbi Hertz. Today, in my normal kviyas, not preparing specifically for tonight, the Sicha, which I was learning today, was Shabbos Bahaloscha, Tovshin Nun Aleph, 21 years ago exactly. And the Rebbe spoke about the fact that it says in the Sedra that the Shia, the measure, the stage when you know that you've lit the menorah is when the flame is rising of its own accord. It doesn't need the attention anymore of the Kohen who's lighting it. That's what Hashalhev, Baha Aloyscha means it's going up. It's going up of its own accord. And the Rebbe traces it through five or six different aspects of life and speaks about how a person is created by HaKadosh Baruch Hu and by the other two partners, the father and the mother, the three shutfim. And they become a person who somebody and some team, those three partners, created that child. But ultimately, the idea is for the child to become independently able to walk, to talk, to eat, to look after themselves. And the same thing applies in the Torah, which is given as a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, but each person is supposed to work with the Torah to such an extent that they acquire it, not because it was given from somewhere else, but because it becomes theirs. A Torah dileihu is the expression that the Gemara uses. At the beginning, it's Torah Hashem. It says right at the beginning of Tilla. Ki im b'toras Hashem cheftzoi, in the Torah of Hashem is his desire, uv'soi dosoi, and in his, the student's Torah, he will be occupied day and night. It starts off, it's Hashem's, and it becomes the one belonging to the pupil. And the Rebbe says the whole of Matan Torah was like that. The Torah was given from in heaven. It was something special, unique, different to all the Torah that existed previously. And yet, the idea is that HaTorah loy b'shamayim hi, not to rely on the Torah as it is in heaven, but to be able to see it in the way that human beings have it. And similarly, the Rebbe speaks about Maisa HaMitzvahs. The way that a person does a mitzvah is to train your body, to force it in a sense. One of the pupils asked me on Friday night privately at the end of the Hofer Brengen at 3:15 about why do you need all these little detailed rules in order to be a Hasidic person? You do the chitas, you have a good feeling, you have a general good thing. What's the difference if this button is closed or not, or different the little details? And what I said was, when you're learning to play the violin, you have to learn all the motions and all of the way, how do you handle the bow and how you handle the violin. You have to go through many, many repetitive motions to train yourself how to do it. And what it turns out to do is to play beautiful music. The person who's a maestro, who's able to play the violin in the most wonderful way in the world, they are more careful than anybody else about the little rules, because that's the only way that you make the music. So it's something which we force ourselves to do in a sense. We do it with Kabbalah soil, but the goal of chinuch and the goal of doing a mitzvah is that we should be able to do it because it's making beautiful music. It's me who wants to express myself rather than me who feels that I'm being forced into some kind of a lifestyle. And that would be called Rechachadehu and chinuch. And I might add that in the Maimah of Ata Tetzaveh, the last Maimah which the Rebbe edited, the last Mugadika Maimah, and which was distributed just less than 2 weeks before Chavzayin Oda, in that Maimah, at the very end, the Rebbe says that the goal of the menorah is that it should light up the candles, it should light up the lamps, in a way that they're able to be self-sufficient. It doesn't, chas v'sholom, mean that we don't require the input from others, and certainly not that we shouldn't need the input from the Rebbe's brachas, from the Eibishter, from everything else. But ultimately, that is what chinuch is. There's inspiration, and there is discipline. There's chesed, and there's gevura. But we have to remember that our goal is to inspire our children. And that's why I like the title, that how we can inspire our children to have joy and pride in chassidus, in Yiddishkeit, in Eibishter, in the Rebbe, in all of these things. In other words, not just that somehow or another they want to be able to remain a loyal part of the family. Or they're good Kabbalah Selnikas, and they say, this is what I have to do, so I do it. But they're doing it out of Kabbalah's oil only. That's a good basis to learn how to move the bow. But ultimately, it should be something which they feel is producing worthy, beautiful, harmonious music. And the people in this room, the mechanchim and the mechanchois, on both sides of the mechitza, I want to tell just 2 points about the tremendous zuchus. Rabbi Hertz, who gets a lion's share of credit for keeping the Moses Achinuch over here in looking after them, making sure that they're here, and that there's something, giving the place and the time, and he's the person that I've been speaking with besides Mrs. Epstein. And Rabbi Hertz mentioned the fact that we have the privilege to be shluchim and shluchas. I was once asked to give a talk in the Kinnas HaShluchim HaOlami, in the global Kinnas HaShluchim in New York, and to speak about the zuchus of being in the aspect of chinuch, of shlichus, which is chinuch. So the first thing I did when I had to prepare was a couple of weeks before, and I sat down in the shul one evening, and I opened up the igros, the Mafteach HaKloli. There is a general index of the first 20 volumes of Igros Kodesh, and I opened it up and looked, where can I find letters which speak about chinuch? And I'll go and check in each of those letters and see where I can find something which will convey the Rebbe's tremendous encouragement to mechanchim. And I'll tell you the truth, I did not look at a single solitary letter. I stayed with the Mafteach itself because I was overwhelmed by the fact that the Erech, the index for Chinuch, covered about 25 columns in the index. And in the brackets, in the parentheses, it would tell you what aspect it was, and you can look in that letter for that thing. And just as I made a little test for myself, I wanted to see how many columns there are for other famous Arochim. I looked up Alter Rebbe. I looked up Torah. I looked up Tshuva. I looked up Geula. I looked up Mashiach. I looked up Eretz Yisrael. I didn't check every single one, but I believe it may be that it has significantly more column spaces in the index alone than any other topic in the Igros Kodesh of the Rebbe. And by looking at it, and you look in the parentheses, and you see, it's just gula for this, the zuchos, the achrayis, how you deal with this or that, and we see, and you look at the letters of the Rebbe in the early years, he was building up the idea of chinuch throughout the world. Also, there was a letter to Rabbi Shlame, which I refer to here, he was the principal, the headmaster of the seminary in France, in Yer. In outside Paris, there's a seminary, Ad HaYom HaZeh, and he was the person that was building it up. And at the Rebbe writes, I heard that you were offered a position of a very choshevura bonus, a rabbinical position. And in the end, you thankfully decided to stay where you are. And the Rebbe says, I'm amazed that you should have even considered to take a rabbinical position when you are a person who is in chinuch, and particularly with the chinuch habonos. And the Rebbe says that in today's generation, that is the choicest aspect of work with Klal Yisrael, is the work of chinuch. And there's nothing that a rav can do which could compare with the power that mechanchim and mechanchis can achieve. So we are the people who are shaping the next generation of children. We are shaping the present generation who are in a very unique situation. They are in a unique situation for the things that they don't see, that people who are 30, 40, 50 years old, they saw something, or they saw people of a certain generation who experienced and witnessed and transmitted certain experiences and values which they were living. And let alone the fact that it's after Gimel Tammuz for us in Chabad. And I know in my school, we have about 120 Talmidos, and there's only one single person, one single pupil who was born before Gimel Tammuz. And that was just a few weeks before. So we're dealing with people who did not see certain things. They did not meet Reb Mendel for Tavash. They did not meet Rabbi Chadakov. They did not meet, think of the various figures that we saw and we heard in this city, in any city. And on the other hand, they're living in a generation when they do see certain things which are challenging, which might put out a challenge, which are very enticing and very addictive, and that's what these children are exposed to. And our privilege and our shlichus is the greatest shlichus that anyone could possibly want, because we have the possibility, and I want to speak tonight about the fact and give a few etzes. We have the accessibility. It's lo rochaku, it's not even difficult to be able to inspire the children of today that they should choose, they should want to go in the way that we know is best for them, and they should themselves appreciate that fact. In Chassidus and in Kabbalah, it speaks about Oides V'Kelem. I want to just mention a few, let me go over, it's a very elementary concept in Chassidus, but I want to mention it because it's something which is exercising my mind in the last few months vis-a-vis chinuch and the challenge and the opportunity of this. There's Or and there's Keli. Or means a light, Keli means the vessel. Or means what you're conveying, and Keli means the instrument through which you are conveying it. For example, you have an idea, you have a thought, and you want to share it with somebody. So the idea, the thought, is the Or, and the language that you use and the words that you express it with, that is the Keli. It's the vehicle through which we express what we're trying to say. You have an emotion, you're excited about something. You're in love with something. You're frightened about something. And you want to share it with somebody else. You have to work out what sort of language do I have to use. In order to choose the language, you have to take into consideration whom you're talking to. Because if you don't say, for example, if you're going to talk in Chinese to an American kid, you don't even get to first step, forget about first base. Or if one is going to use, even in the same vernacular, but you don't choose the right expressions, we do not get through. And conversely, if a person uses the right language, you're able to convey an emotion, a feeling, an idea, that the person should be able to understand it, and the person should be able to become excited by the thing they want them to get excited by. That's what chinuch is. It's chesed and gvura, call it, klal and prat, or and keli. But there's a funny thing in this interaction. The stronger, the more attention one gives to the keli, the more the or is likely or liable to become diluted. If you're taking into consideration who the person is, it tends to be inversely proportional. In other words, the stronger the light, the more you're giving the message, the less you take into consideration what the person is thinking. So you scream about something, or you get all excited, and you go hoopla, and you dance, and you scream, and the kid doesn't know what you're talking about, and why you're so excited about something. Or they don't know why we're so angry about something, why we're so demanding about something. On the other hand, if we take into consideration the keli, the vessel, the instrument, too much, then we're likely to dilute the whole message and not to give over the purity and the authenticity that we're trying to convey. So that is the issue. And I understand there's a sefer which was written by the previous Rebbe, by the Rayatz, Rabbi Yosef Yitzchak, called Klolei HaChinuch VaHaHadrocha, the Principles of Education and Guidance. And we teach it to our oldest classes in school. Now this sefer, you take that sefer, you see that of a tremendous amount of the chapters, the 17 chapters, and the majority of them are talking, I think, about the keli, taking into consideration who you're talking to. It was made, by the way, the sefer was published in after the visit of the Friedrich Rebbe to Chicago, by the way, there's a special connection to Chicago. But it was written, it was based on notes that the Friedrich Rebbe wrote in Tof Reish Nun Zayin in 1897, about 8 months after the yeshiva, the Lubavitch yeshiva was founded, Tom Chet Mimim in Lubavitch. There was a meeting of the Hanhola discussing the needs and progress of every single one of the pupils. They spent 2 days or a day and three quarters in the summer on the dacha with the Rebbe Rashab, the Mashpiyim of the yeshiva, the Manahel, who was the previous Rebbe, and his father, the then Rebbe, the Rebbe Rashab. And the Rebbe Rashab told the Friedrich Rebbe to write out the Klolei HaChinuch VaHadrocha. And it tells you about how one has to take into consideration the place where the Talmud is. Not just their abilities, but what is their financial, their economic state. Where is their geographic experience? What kind of habits do they have? Things. What sort of occupation do they do? Where are they coming from in order to be able to get through to them? But if you look at it, it's many of the chapters. Nevertheless, I believe that a key chapter in that, if those who have studied it, and I think every mechanech should have a kavias to read it regularly, if you look at Perek Yudalit, chapter 14, the Rebbe speaks about how the way to get through to a Talmud is through the love, the caring, the awareness, and the monitoring that the teacher gives towards the pupil, and the love, the respect, and the love and the trust which the Talmud has in the teacher. And to sum it up in two words, he calls it the tokef and the noam. The tokef means the tenacity, the firmness that there is, that the pupil knows that the teacher is not going to vacillate, is not going to withdraw from a position, on the one hand. That's, I call that the or. That's the light, that's the intensity. And the noyam, but the pleasantness. If the pupil knows that it's being delivered out of a sense of love, if the pupil feels that there's a love and a caring and a concern and a monitoring, that the teacher is not just saying what they have to say, but they're taking into consideration where I'm coming from, the pupil will be receptive and will take it. And he says, he'll use the expression, an ironclad unmovability of the teacher will be respected and loved by the pupil. Somebody who looks up to someone and feels that they care about them and feels that they are thinking about them as a person, as an neshama, as an individual, would be proud, would go out of their way. You don't have to demand that kind of a standard. They'd be looking for it. What do you think so-and-so will think of me about a teacher? We all have probably experienced such teachers or mentors or mashpiyim or rabbonim, somebody in our life who is in our day-by-day life whom we never wanted to let down. The strongest motivation was not any fear and was not any seeking of a reward or fear of a punishment. It was having the approval, fitting in with the kavona. Chassidim always said, we used to always fit in the Rebbe's kavona. Yeah, what were you afraid of? You're not afraid of any punishment. You can do, a person can do what they want. Everyone has bechira. But the strongest thing, a person will go, Mesidus Nafish Mamish, because they know this is what the Rebbe wants. And in a miniature way, like you said, am I a Rebbe? The Rebbe said that every single chosid is like a little drop of water. And the Rebbe is like the sun in the sky. And the Rebbe said that a body of water, an ocean, has a reflection of the sun. A river has a reflection of the sun. A tub of water has a reflection of the sun. A glass of water has a reflection of the sun. And every single drop, every individual drop of water reflects the entire sun globe on it. Two conditions. The Rebbe writes this in a letter, Yud Gimel Nissen Tovshin Chavav, if I remember correctly. Two conditions. Number one, it has to be facing the sun, learning from the Rebbe. And number two, it has to be clean. It's got to be pure. If a Talmud is getting something from a person who they feel cares about them, they are going to be inspired to want to be like that person and to live up to the expectations of that person. When we think about the situation, the matziv, what's called in Klali Chinuch Madrocha of today's generation, there's a sicha of the Rebbe based on a concept which is in Chassidus, in Torah Or, about the difference between Yosef HaTzadik and his brothers. They came to Mitzrayim, they stood before Yosef, and the Torah tells us, Vayakeh Yosef es Echov, Vehem lo yikiruhu. Yosef recognized his brothers, they didn't recognize him. So Rashi gives two interpretations, that when he fell into their hands, they didn't recognize him as a brother. They were indifferent or hostile and they sold him into slavery. They fell into his hand and he didn't harm them. That's one interpretation. Another one is that when he left them, he didn't have a beard and they already had beard, so he could see that they still looked similar to where they looked when he was sold, but they didn't see that little boy today as the same person they were standing next to. But in Chassidus it says a different interpretation, a pnimizdik interpretation. The Shvatim, the brothers of Yosef, were shepherds because they had to find an occupation that would allow them to commune with HaKadosh Baruch Hu, to be able to not be too involved in worldly matters, so they should be able to focus and they should be able to become absorbed in spiritual activities. Yosef HaTzadik was in the koch of Mitzrayim. He was in the superpower of the time. in a very sophisticated economy, sophisticated technology. There are things that they knew in Egypt in those days that even today the scientists have not yet worked out. Certain engineering feats, certain chemistry, certain paints that they were able to make. There were things, many things that were happening then that even today in 2012 that people are still trying to work out what they knew. And Yosef was right at the pinnacle. He was at the top of that society. And he was an administrator and running a global network. And yet he was the same Yosef HaTzadik. So Vayaka Yosef HaSechov, Yosef recognized his brothers and how they could be that spiritual. But they were not on as high a level as he was, and therefore they could not, because in order to be able to be immersed in the world and at the same time absolutely, totally loyal and absolutely attached to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for that you need a much deeper and a higher spirituality. They didn't understand that a person can have that type of thing, because Yosef was Tzaddik Elyon, he was a higher level spiritually. The Rebbe mentioned this once, the Ushpiz of Yosef, and the Rebbe said that today's 90% of the Jews, or 95, the Rubam Kukulam of the Jewish people today, are living in societies like Yosef did, not like the Shvatim did. Not like our great grandparents did 150 years ago in Russia or in India or wherever the Yidden were 150 years ago in great numbers. Today there's a much more sophisticated, much more demanding type of Gashmiyazdika. The material life is something which engages a person, forces us to become involved much more. So the Rebbe said, how can you compare a Jew today to a Jew of then? The Rebbe said, there's koiches today which are greater than those which existed then from the koyach of the Yosef of our generation. Meaning, the Rebbe, the Friedrich Rebbe gives a koyach, there's a certain guidance that gives that power. In other words, at the same time as we look at the nishyoynes, at the temptations that our children have to contend with, we should also realize that if we inspire them, and we create within them the desire to follow in the way and to try to emulate what we're trying to represent and to model and to ask of them and to be mechanech them, that they have a much deeper, it's a deeper Yiddishkeit, the Yiddishkeit that was dependent upon the society around it and everything. It was difficult not to keep 150 years ago, if you were in that kind of a society, that kind of a community, or these little self-contained communities you have today, it's even much more difficult even in those communities, because there's an infiltration of the outside. Today you need a different Eitzer. Today you need a different method to be able to inspire. On the other hand, when a person is inspired today, it's them. It's not because the person was physically getting a dollar every week, let's say a chosid. The person is dedicated because they have an inner connection. They want to. That's our goal, to make the person want to. It's more difficult to get there sometimes. Sometimes there might be backsliding. Sometimes there might be things who have various manifestations that I would imagine in any city and in any chinuch system, there are going to be these challenges. On the other hand, where we're bringing them to is that they should feel for it, they should see this as superior to all of the other temptations, and anything else that there is in the world is good insofar as it is an instrument to help to fulfill the goals that they have in life. The technology is wonderful because it can help you be a better chosid. Not it's wonderful because it gives me a break from being a chosid. That kind of a feeling is accessible to every young person today. The story that the Rebbe told on Simchas Torah Tov Shechavav about the Friedrich Rebbe was in Cheder as a boy of 5-6 years old in Lubavitch. and he was looking out the window. And when the Rebbe told it, he said, I don't know what there was to see outside a window in Lubavitch 100 years ago. But that's the story. And he told it over. And his teacher told him, Was sitzt du in der Wein? Guckst in der Reusen, besser sitzen in der Reusen und gucken in der Wein. Stehen in der Reusen und gucken in der Wein. Why do you sit inside and look out? It would have been better for you to stand outside and look in. And the Rebbe explained, our Rebbe explained the story that it's telling us that we're b'makom shemachshavtei shel adam, sham hu nimtza, and the place where a person's thought is, that's where he is or she is. And in today's generation, you have the Baal Tshuva and in Lubavitch, the Gevorene and the Gevorene have one thing in common. You're a Lubavitcher because of what you are inside. It's a commitment. You never have it made forever. It's a day by day renewal of a commitment. So 40 years ago and 50 years ago, what people were doing is they were on the outside and looking in and being attracted. Today, many of the young people today are inside and they're looking out. And they're wondering what they're missing. And we have the privilege to be able to reassure them and to inspire them that what they have here is what they want. And the key to do it, as I have here in the handout, is fostering a relationship with that child. And the relationship is based on what it says in chapter 14 of Klalei HaChinuch VaHadracha. HaToikiv VaHanoyam. I wrote here VaAhava, but I think the expression is VaHanoyam. It is a firmness. You stand for something. It's not because you compromise. It's not because they know that they can get their way with you. You represent something, and yet at the same time, they feel there's someone who cares about me, someone who wants to know about me, is somebody who is dedicated to me, someone who loves me, someone who is interested in where I am and where I'm going and how far I've got, in a genuine way, not in a way where I'm just an instrument for whatever it is. And I recently, one of our Talmidim from England, Yeshaya Strux, Zichrono Lebracha, who was, it's very painful to me to talk about him, because I think that his loss was a very serious blow, not with Yichas Rishinit, it was a serious blow to the Chinuch system of Chabad and of the Jewish world today. Because I think he was a mechanech par excellence, and specifically, the specific thing I wanted to speak about, I know he was in London some months ago to visit his mother, Shlita, and I don't remember why, but I told three little stories about his father, Avadya Oliver Sholem. And he went and chazed them over with me, or he emailed me, he wanted to make sure he got them right, so that I have to share them with my class. I found out that he every day would tell a story to his class. When it came, but the biggest thing of all is that when it came recess time, the break, what we call in England, he would go out and play baseball with the kids. And he was the pitcher. And the pitcher's job is to be able to make it hard for the batter to be able to hit. Kiyodua, an American boy like me, was brought up on these games. And he would specially make it very easy for certain kids that he had to be makariv, and perhaps they had a low self-image, he would make it easy for them to hit dafke, and everyone knew it. They knew that his playing baseball with them was not something separate from him, who he was an extremely strict teacher. And I saw the comments that some of the people made, including even people who said, I'm out of all of this. Someone who seemed very disillusioned from their experiences in the world of chinuch, Rachman Ruslan, I don't know what and who, but they said one thing I got was with him, He was very strict, but very caring. I felt he was something human. And from there we go to the fact that one of the most effective methods of communicating values to our Talmidim and Talmidos is in the non-learning time. I know that when it comes recess time, the teacher needs a break also. And you want to be able to just sit down for 10 minutes and have a coffee. We're all operating under pressures. We're all under a very great pressures outside of our whole life in school. We're all wearing so many hats and trying to multitask. It's a difficult thing, but we have to cultivate within ourselves the pleasure that comes from knowing what you've achieved by doing it. I saw Lahavdil Elef, I tell my teachers, years ago, wasn't in my department, but my office in London overlooks the school playground. And I saw a teacher, was not a Hebrew teacher, was not a Jewish person. And I would see that when it came the recess time, the break time, when she was on duty, she would go see a girl who was there on her own, and she'd walk over and would talk with her. I didn't know what she said and didn't say. Just see if she would spend 30 seconds with that person. To take an interest, Lahavdil, we call Malamda Yiskalti. I want to just share with you two stories. One is of a bacher in the yeshiva in London. He was like a dorm counselor, shaliach, Talmud shaliach. And I for bringing the yeshiva usually about, as often as possible. It usually comes out to approximately once a year, sometimes twice. I give them a talk about camp, maybe one talk and one for bringing. The imbigvura is two. But the boy called me up. He said, Rabbi Luke, can I come and see you? Coming to the yeshiva 7 miles away, coming by bus and by train, by underground, by subway, it takes, a better part of an hour each way. As I said, if a bacher wants to see me anytime, he said, come tomorrow, 2:00. He turned up at 2:00. He made a major trip. And he came to see me, and I said, what's the problem? And he says, he's a boy from England, who is a Baal Tshuva, and his teens and his family, they were like traditional fine Adler people, and they became Frum as well. And he had gone to JFS school. That's like a very large, largest school in Europe, like almost 2,000 kids. And that's where he was. Maybe he came in the start of the year. And then he came to Lubavitch, and he was in the yeshiva, and then he was a shaliach. He was about 20 years old at that time, 21. He said that there's a boy in the yeshiva who's 16. And he has serious questions in Emunah. And I don't remember the questions myself, by the way, but he shared them with me at the time. And I want to know how to handle it. And he said to me that when he was a boy of 15, the same age, he was in JFS school, and they gave them a weekend in Gateshead Yeshiva. Gateshead Yeshiva is like Lakewood, it's like literature. Very large yeshiva in northern England. It's about 300 miles away, and they had some rabbis, and they discussed emunah questions, and I was impressed. He says, as a kid, that there was answers. So I'll tell you what I told him, and that's what I'm sharing with myself and with every one of you tonight. I said it's important to be able to have, and I gave him the kudis points on the questions that boy asked. I told him a couple of directions of answer. I said, but I promise you, I didn't ask him who it was, and I didn't want to know. I said, but I can, without knowing who the kid is, I can virtually promise you that there's something beyond the theological, philosophical, intellectual question. I said, you want to go and help this boy? He says, yes. I said, take an interest in him. Not necessarily the time of yeshiva. When there's a break, when there's a lunchtime, ask him about his family, ask him about what he likes, what he does. Not too intrusive, but just show an interest in a natural way in that boy. And he came to me a few months later, he said, it's like complete transformation. The boy became friendly with him and began to live up to what he expected. Every teacher has that ability, without compromising on the curriculum, without compromising on standards of behavior, without compromising on what any other demand, but to find a way. This is parents need this, and teachers certainly need this. We are the ones that are the mental footfaces of these children. We are the ones that they are looking up to, or they should be looking up to, or they should be trying to win the approval of. And then there's the story of the Friedrich Rebbe, which was told by a woman who came from an extremely prominent Hasidic family, and then there were two sisters and a lot of brothers that were very, very high level of Hasidic. And the women themselves, it was a very difficult time in Russia 100 years ago, and somehow or another, they drifted away and became like very strong Zionist socialist type of people. They went to Israel. They actually visited, and they were childhood friends of the Rabbein, of the Rebbetzin and the Rebbetzin sisters, because their father was the gabbai, was the secretary, the attendant, the personal gabbai of the previous Rebbe, of the Rebbe Rashab. And he used to learn with the Friedrich Rebbe. He was like a kvayochel, a chava. Later on, he was a very dedicated chassid, and he was kodesh in the Holocaust. And one time, they went on vacation, on holiday, on dacha. The Rebbe Rashab would go on dacha. There was a whole entourage. When he was the Lubavitcher Rebbe, so his office went with him. It was just Klal Yisrael was going. He needed it for his health. So one of the people, one of the wagons that went was the gabbai and his family. And this woman who, when she told the story, she was about 85 years old. And she said she was a little girl, about 4 years old, let's say, 5 years old. And the girls were playing games. They had their own little activities. And they were playing what we call blind man's bluff. Somebody, you cover your eyes, and everybody finds a place where to stand, and the person who's blindfolded has to walk around the room, and the first person they touch becomes it. They're the ones that have to cover their eyes. And the girls took a little bit of advantage of this, because she was younger than the other one. She was like the youngest one there, and they decided to play a trick on her. And the trick was that the person who's blindfolded is supposed to walk around, and when they feel the person, they touch them. But what they did was, when they saw she's coming near, they quietly moved away, so she never was going to find anybody, because they kept on moving, a moving target. In the meanwhile, the Friedrich Rebbe, Rayatz, walked into the room. He was then a young man, the son of the Rebbe, but he was Rayatz, he was Friedrich Rebbe. This is like about 1910, just about 100 years ago. He walked into the room and he sized up the situation in a split second, what was happening. And what he did was, he quietly walked up near the girl, and she touched him. And he said, "Oh, I'm it." And his daughter saw that he did this, and his daughter jumped up and she said, "No, Tata, that's not for you." She felt bad, you know, this is not for the Rebbe Rayatz. She said, "This is not for you, you don't do it." So the Friedrich Rebbe said, "What would you feel like if somebody told you that your father was a cheater? You know, not following the rules of the game?" She said, "I'd feel bad." So he said, "You know, when you play a game, you're supposed to play by the correct rules. And he insisted, and he put on the blindfold. Just as he was putting on the blindfold, in walked Reb Chonya Marozov, the private secretary of the Rebbe Rashab. And he sees here the Rebbe, the young Rebbe, who he knew is a tzaddik, and is putting on a blindfold. So he said to him, "The Tata Zuchtir, your father is looking for you. Und du spielst mit den Kindern, and you're playing with the children." So the Rebbe Shab told his Gabbai he urgently wants to see the Friedrich Rebbe. So Friedrich Rebbe said, "The Tata sucht seine Kinder, sein Kind, und ich suche meine Kinder. My father is looking for his child, and I'm looking for my children." And when I saw that story, it hit me very, very deeply. And he insisted on giving 30 seconds, whatever it was, to the game, because there was a lesson to be taught. And when I saw it here, I was reminded of that story when I saw that Shaya Strzok used to play baseball with the kids. Because what you can communicate to a person outside of the traditional, formal setting of learning, without any loss to anything, it can be edifying. It will make the rest of your time of teaching a pleasure instead of something that you feel is a pressure. And you're always like on end. Am I going to keep the control? Am I going to get what I have to? Am I going to cover the ground? Are they going to do what I want them to do? L'chatchila, the whole relationship becomes something else. The opportunity during something which is not a learning moment to be able to feel and to be able to promote and to be able to further the chinuch goals, in a sense, it can be done much deeper, both as a parent and as a teacher, and maybe more so as a teacher, because the child thinks of you as the teacher. And here they see you're not just a teacher. It's a person who cares about every area of my life and is teaching me a lesson in morality, in honesty, how to play a game. It's also part of Torah. Now I just want to share with you a few answers from the Rebbe. One is a letter which I recently read. I think it's in Chelek Vav, in my normal kviyas of learning letters of the Rebbe. Somebody wrote to the Rebbe that they were feeling despondent because they felt that they were in chinuch, but any achievement they had was just momentary. So the Rebbe said two things. Number one, he said, "You learned Tanya, Perik Chaf Hei." The Rebbe says, "V'yichud zeh l'mayla, u'nitzchi l'olam v'od." That when you do a mitzvah, you create a yichud, you create a divine unification. It means you're bringing down from the Ori into the Keli, which itself flows through and has an effect on all of the cosmos and of all of the worlds, down to this very world. It brings redemption to the whole world. And it's permanent. It's eternal. It can never, ever be stopped. Even if a person, God forbid, later on, doesn't continue. But that mitzvah that they did, the whole idea of the mitzvah, that a person put on tefillin, that once, it has an infinite and an eternal effect. And secondly, the Rebbe said, besides that, the fact that it happens every so often, the accumulative effect is that not only is it something because of once, it'll be eternal, but it's something which ultimately will make a difference and will have reach its tipping point when the time comes. Another story, a very interesting story, which I heard from a bocher. It's printed somewhere now, and I think I have the details right. The Rebbe was very much for people to be engaged in mitvachshor, in the release time in New York. That was something which was established by the Friedrich Rebbe, through the Rebbe, who worked through Rabbi J.J. Hecht in acquiring permission, legal permission, despite the separation of the religion, of the church and state in this country. At the end of the day, they got permission to be able to take children out if they want to. You can't go into the school even to offer it. But if any child says, if any parent says, I want my child to be withdrawn once a week for an hour, that was allowed, legally allowed. So Wednesday, from 2 to 3, the last hour of the day, it's always Wednesday, it's been like that for 70 years, children are taken out. What we used to do, and they still do it today, is at the beginning of the school year, you go with setelach, with leaflets, which explain it, and you go to outside the school at 3 o'clock and give it out to the children. You cannot give it out inside the school. So we get bachrim going, and there's a whole moisture of this. And then the parents send in the form, and then you bring it to the school, and it comes to that day, and we take them out to a nearby shul. In California, they did it in big trailers. They made mobile classrooms, different days, whatever it was, all kinds of creative ways. And the Rebbe very, very much promoted it. In our day, there was a bacha who the Rebbe asked him. He was in Yechidus before his birthday. And the bacha said to the Rebbe, my birthday falls out on a Wednesday this year. Wednesday wasn't a Yechidus night. I thought that that's a day of his boydidus and his boyninus and to be on your own. So I thought that day I wouldn't go there. And the Rebbe said, there's no better day, no better thing you could do on your birthday to go to Wednesday hour. But there was another boy who wrote to the Rebbe his psychological problem with Wednesday hour. With Kabbalah Sol, he would do it. But he didn't feel the simcha of doing it. And he wrote to the Rebbe why. He said, number one, it's highly disruptive to me. I'm not like other bachrim. Because I know that what happened is, Wednesday, you had to eat earlier that day, on Wednesday. Then you had to join a little van or a car or a taxi, whatever it was, to go with a whole bunch of other bachrim to East Flatbush or whatever the neighborhood was. And then you'd come back about 5 o'clock. So he said, on Tuesday, I'm already getting nervous about the fact that my whole learning on Wednesday is going to be disrupted between 1:30 and 5:30, and it's already interrupting my learning on Tuesday. And Monday, I'm thinking about how I'm going to be nervous on Tuesday. And Thursday, I'm being frustrated for what happened yesterday. So he said, most of my week is going by without this. So he wanted to be given somehow a dispensation that he shouldn't have to do it. Secondly, he said, what we're doing with the kids anyway? Until you get them out of the school and you walk them to over the traffic, you get them into the shul, you gotta start giving them prizes, you say a couple of tefillahs with them or whatever it is, teach them a little bit. So it's really not, in my week, it's a major, major difference. It's half of my learning, or more than it, which is going down the drain, for something which doesn't seem to be worth it. And third of all, when you come back every week, it's just like it's the first week you ever had Wednesday hour. They've forgotten everything from the week before. No effect. And they never told this person, as far as I remember, point number one, he said, you have a problem. But the problem is not Wednesday hour, the problem is you. In other words, if you didn't have Wednesday hour, you'd get nervous about the fact that tomorrow or next week you have a dental appointment or whatever else. It would be something you'd be nervous about, something that has to do with your psyche. And you need help on that. But don't take it out on Wednesday hour. He didn't say that, but that was the implication. Number two, about the insignificance of what the kids did, the Rebbe said that the obvious Avram, Yitzchak, and Yaakov and Moshe Rabbeinu would give up what they have in Gan Eden to be able to have the Zuchus to come and say Shema Yisrael with a Jewish kid. And that which you say, that it doesn't last, it, every single time you do it, it has an effect. It wasn't this answer, I think, but there is in the Igros an answer to somebody with a similar kainef in Eretz Yisrael. He went to a kibbutz every week and he said, it makes no effect. And the Rebbe said, every time you say it, it's being recorded in that little child's mind. And when they reach crossroads in life, very often it'll happen when they get married, important stations in this person's lifetime, they will think back who they are and what they are, and all everything that you've said will then have a significant effect on the decisions that they make and the way they set up their lives. And it's something which is a lifetime. It's not just the minute that they're saying the bracha. Besides the fact that the minute is also something which the others would give up everything for. Just to say a few things about individual approach, just I'll make it quick now. Number one, we have in Baloyser the Shiva Neder Samanoida, and the Alter Rebbe writes in Likutei Torah, you have to have the right approach to each person. You have to take into consideration the keli, as it says in Kolol Echinuch V'Adrocha. The light is the light of the menorah, it's the same flame. But the keli, the way one does it, it's not a compromise, it's adjusting. It's doing something which suits to that child. Not to say, oh, when I was a kid, I did it anyway. Well, my brother, or your brother. Never to compare a child to any sibling. That's the biggest no-no of all. Because when you say that, you're saying you are not someone who I care about. You're a little, you are a little box. And the box is Goldberg, Cohen, whatever the kid's name is. As we find in the Seder, the four sons, how the Rebbe speaks about in the letter, he says, just like you would not rely on your top pupil just advancing as they are, you put attention into the Chochem. In the same way, you should give attention and a care to each of the other ones. We saw tonight in the Living Torah that we saw as a Hakdama, the Dvar Malchus, before this talk, in which the Rebbe spoke on Purim Tovshin Lamed Beis about the idea of what's called in education today, it's called differentiation. It means to say, to take into consideration the specific needs of each person. I know that here in Chicago, the girls' school, the LGHS, has the system of groups in Chumash, the levels in Chumash, and we emulated that, spent months and got somebody in to teach it and to prepare it and sent letters to the parents. We didn't just go into it. And when the government inspector came and they checked the Limudei Kodesh as well, they were very, very impressed with that whole system. And the system is fantastic because it means that the person who is capable of a much greater achievement is not held back by the mediocrity that would be the mean of the level of the class, on the one hand. And on the other hand, the person who's struggling and can hardly read and can hardly read the Rashi Oisius, maybe even the Chumash Oisius, that person is getting the attention that they require in order to be able to achieve what they can achieve. In the same way, when you're talking to an individual, who, by the way, within each of those groups, of those levels, there's a thing called differentiation, to be able to, within that, to hone it in a way that everyone gets what they need. That's what the Sikha was saying, as I understand it. Taking into consideration the specific needs, and certainly in the playground or out of school, when we had a cheder, like a Hebrew school, Talmud Torah classes, in London, when I first came there, there were many, many hundreds of families, maybe thousands, in Stamford Hill, who were like three times a year Jews. Very hard to eat, but not really that observant. And one of the things that we did, that was one of my chinuch activities the first few years I was in England, we would visit their homes. Every day we would visit a parent and try to tell them what we're trying to do with the child. And it brought them nearer, invite them for Shabbos sometimes. To show a caring about where that child is. And in the Rishimis of the Rebbe's mother, Rebbe Tzinchana, which are coming out every week, a treasure which is coming out week by week, one of the earlier weeks, she spoke about when the Rebbe was a three-year-old child and there was a pogrom and they had to hide. And there was a danger that the children are going to cry and they're going to somehow or another betray where they are. And it was quiet and they went there and they saw there was a boy, which was the Rebbe. And he was there motivating the children. But what the Rebbe Tanchana writes is he couldn't speak because he couldn't make noise either. So he did it with a sign of his hand. And he said he did a different type of sign for each child according to their level and according to the age. The idea of taking into consideration, this was the Rebbe at the age of 3. You could read it in the Rishimis yourself, the Rebbe Tanchana's Rishimis. And the same thing I say, within a community, there are special children and gifted children. There are children who cannot keep up with the standard thing, and we understand that they have to be given special attention. We also have to be careful in our classes, and in our moisdes, and in our community, not to take the gifted children for granted. There are some children who are capable of a lot more. And unfortunately, what happens, that if they are not catered for, they either become bored, they might become disruptive, but maybe even worse than that, they will start finding interest in other things. They will express their curiosity in avenues which perhaps they shouldn't do it, whereas we, thinking about each individual and in our systems to build in a care for each of those things, that's what we should be doing. And finally, let me just say that we, every one of us, at the same time as communicating and caring and thinking about every one of our Talmidim and Talmidois, has to be a role model in our behavior. Wherever you might be holding, the Man Hashem, don't talk when you come into shul, and don't come in at 11:30 on a Shabbos afternoon. Even if you've been learning Chassidus since 6 a.m., and had to walk 3 hours to the mikveh because the mikveh here wasn't working that day. Whatever it is, because every single thing that we do is going to be exaggerated in the eyes of our Talmidim. The way we dress, the way we behave, the way we act makes a major... And I tell you, I've dealt with people from the age of about maybe 15 to 50, younger life, who have written to me. I don't have that many people at any given time. It might be 10, 15 at any given time, but it's a good cross-section, I think, globally and gender-wise and age-wise. And some people write, they tell me experiences they had with the mashpia or with a fever. And it makes me want to cry sometimes. When you read what the effect that this has for a generation. And similarly, to accentuate the positive side of it, when a person sees a model of somebody who represents something they want to look up to, it inspires them. And you have changed somebody and generations. It's going to make a difference to doire doires. Being non-judgmental, it does not mean compromising. If somebody comes, if you see, I heard once from in a Kinnas HaSluchim, a teacher said, when he walks into a room and he saw a kid on the internet, in an inappropriate page, instead of saying, I chapped you, or saying, hey, what are you doing there? He went over to the kid and he said, I see you're having a problem with the Eitz HaHara. Let me know a way that I can help you. Went to the to in a non-judgmental way, didn't compromise. Adirapa said, "I'm going to help you to be able to get where you're supposed to be." And most important of all is that we, as mechanchim, should, and as parents for that matter, should express the midah of simcha in what we're doing. Kol ha'pidushim b'simcha, that deserves a talk on its own. But to say something with Simcha is singing on Eden. And Hashem should help that we, it says, Al Tigu b'Mashiachoi, Elu Tinoikim Shel Beis Rabba. The Gemara says that Mashiach, that's children. And through the chinuch of children, we'll bring about this galus of Mashiach Tzakenu, that Hashem help, that it should be because of Mamish, that by Yimel Tammuz, Tov Shinayim Beis, well before then, we should be able to point to the Rebbe and say, "Ugi dulam shegidalnu." Maybe she's hoping that the Moises Hachinuch in Chicago and Illinois and in England and in all the whole Medunois Malchus of the Rebbe, which means globally, should raise Talmidim and Talmidus Harbe, who are dedicated to the Nekuda, who do it from a sense of inspiration and simcha and feeling privileged to be able to express it, that anyone who sees them just becomes inspired by seeing that that's the way the kid looks. Chaim l'chaim. Any questions? Well, it's after 10 o'clock. Good enough.